again, a question, why do we accept this abuse, this assault on who we are as powerful, powerful, powerful beings? And then how to get out of this mess? And listening to Martin Luther King yesterday give his final speech, it moves me in so many ways. Every time I hear it, the courage of this man. He talking about seeing the promised land, which to me that falls right in line with what we are talking about. For me, when we describe things like ending wage work and, you know, and it's all the same thing, right? It's all getting power off our backs, getting to something where it's more harmonious and in line with the earth. And so at that period, people hearing him and getting inspired, it felt like there was something churning, and his death, it took the steam out of it, and in some ways was effective in slowing down that movement. And so listening to his words and then contrasting that with today and how seemingly we're in the same position. And so how do we get ourselves out of this mess? How do we move forward from this place of stuck, unhealthy, hierarchical bullcrap that we are in? And I get sad sometimes. I was talking to a good friend. She saw a documentary this week about the bees and how, and they were talking about how by 2000, the bees could possibly be extinct. And, you know, and then I talked to her about, you know, Einstein, who said that if the honeybees died, that would be the, you know, end of humanity. And, you know, and so her conclusion was really depressing because she felt like that we were, this is it, we're done. And I think every generation has that. So how do we re-inspire? You know, when I listen to Martin Luther King, I'm like, heck yeah. Like, you know, how do we get in touch with that hope, that vision? You know, because that is our power. We see it. We can do it. I really want to dissolve that hopelessness. I think that's our role, if anything. I feel that, you know, being a father, I'm there to support and love and to help guide my son, but you know, he's definitely his own strong entity, and I can't control and force him, you know, to do anything. He is the child of the universe, as we all are. And then later on that day, I saw these two kids, two males holding hands. Couldn't have been more than eighth grade. And for whatever reason, that kind of gave me hope. Not that the world, it will fix itself just because there are courageous boys walking down the street holding hands, but it was like this, it was courage, you know, it's like, this is who I am, you know? And I think the more we can be like, this is who I am, and express that and put that out there and to help the physical space around us affect that. You know, I'm a powerful, beautiful, loving individual. I think that would be, that's the key, you know, and then all this other stuff falls into place, you know, good fellowship and working together and discussion and dialogue. So how do we get to that point where we're realizing that we are powerful individuals who have a responsibility to each other, to get to that authentic joyfulness, you know, not what Bentham was talking about, which was forcing people to realize some false happiness, which that's what I see a lot of today.
Well, I wanted to respond to a couple things you said, D-Way, in terms of inspiring hope and how claiming one's individual power is part of a process of inspiring all of us. As you said, you were inspired by seeing something that would not have been, say, an earlier generation, you know, that we are starting to overcome the training that Bentham explained to power had to be given us. And I focus on Bentham, and you alluded to this as well, when you said you've seen people pretending to be happy. And Samuel Butler has a great quote. He said it was astonishing to him how many young people told themselves they were happy when they were really miserable, and how readily they blame themselves for any unhappiness they might feel. We have to, I think, start consciously seeing how this process of instilling discipline in ourselves happens. Because Bentham's words are not past tense. I mean, they are effectively how we are living our lives today. When he said that the parent is but a deputy, I mean, that's the truth. That's the truth. We are training this instant obedience in children. When I was at the tot lot, there was a home daycare provider who brought her children there. And when I arrived, it was like a countdown in progress. Okay, we have 9 minutes. Okay, we have, you know, 5, 4, 3. And when those minutes were up And she called to one young person, drop the toy and come. He dropped the toy and came. I mean, we are marching in lockstep to the voice of authority. And even if the voice isn't physically present, the voice of authority, that's what jobs do. They train us to respond to the voice of authority. And Bentham is right. The parent is the deputy of the state, because we begin the training in obedience. So it's not just having the courage to hold someone's hand. It's a deeper courage we need right now. I mean, you say that Nanji is big, and I agree. Your child, my grandchild, he is very, very big. But he, like all of us, is literally being squeezed. There is only so much that one person or two people or a family, whatever, can do in this situation when we have a global imposition of manufactured scarcity. We are all getting squeezed, squeezed, squeezed. So we are going to have to do this together, figure this out, and help each other, because there are no individual solutions. It is not about an individual becoming bigger. It is about developing mechanisms for us to start sharing the burden together. The burden of isolation, of feeling small, and simultaneously the burden of providing for our lives, because the stress is enormous out there right now.